I'll call the meeting to order of what we will now call the Health and Human Services Work Group. For those who, well, most of all, everybody here probably understands the process, but it being special session, technically we sort of start over, so we will continue to work from where we were with the assumption of all we passed, but that from a technical point of view, we'll just have to at some point in time pass that. But we have a working document now that we will continue to use, and we'll just proceed from that. For purposes of helping people with their schedule, we had the idea of a potluck all the way through the weekend, but that's been vetoed, so we won't do that. We will not be meeting through the entire holiday weekend, so the next meeting after today and not tomorrow. Next meeting will therefore be on Tuesday, and so I guess it's at, I think it's at 10 or 10:30 on Tuesday, so we can make those plans accordingly. And we also, at least at this point, and you know how it is with day-to-day things that may happen, but there are no plans at this point anyway to be meeting through the weekend subsequent to that. But I think you have to sort of stay tuned as progress is made. So that's sort of the plan that we have. We'll probably today be going until about, about an hour and a half or so, I think, is what our schedule is going to be because of other commitments that we're meeting today, and we'll just pick up the agenda from there. So, that being the case, let's see if we can begin, and I'm going to try if we can work our way through some items that are the non-money items. And let's go, first of all, to Article 1, Sections 59 and 60. This would be in Article 1, that's the Senate Article 1, but actually House Sections 59 and 60. And I believe it matches up, however, with Senate File 1204. And maybe if staff can walk us through, because I think the conclusion was that these are nearly identical or could be passed today. So once they're around to all the members, maybe we can act on this.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 58 and 59 are identical to the language that was passed in House File 1161, which is really 1204.
So we could adopt House Section 59, then that would be identical to the Senate section?
There's one exception in that. It's identical except in Section 59, 144.1476 refers to rural pharmacy planning and transition grants. That's the only thing that is not identical to language that was passed in the omnibus licensing bill. So we might want to include that one provision.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bergen?
Mr. Chairman, we have that as a separate item in our bill, and I believe it is in Article 1 and was funded through the pharmacy board. Maybe staff can help me remember where.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bergen, I don't really believe we need to reference the rural pharmacy grant program here.
We don't have it on our side?
No, we don't, because I think we handled it differently. I don't really know
we
why
have it
we
in
need
the omnibus bill.
Right, but this is basically allowing, it's just a cross-reference to the rural grant program, allowing the Board of Pharmacy to increase fees and then use those fees to pay for the grant program. We're taking the money out of the surplus of the special revenue fund and not increasing fees. So we're appropriating through our a rider money to the Board of Pharmacy to spend.
Is that a one?
Maybe we should put that one out then.
Senator Bergman, I'm inclined to say if there's sufficient money in it, I'll make sure that I've got this right now, but if there's sufficient money, the Senate then is using reserves in that fund to pay for this, mm-hmm. whereas we were raising fees or something to cover this. I'm sorry that I've forgotten this, but can the staff remind me from a House point of view how we covered this fund? Pardon?
We just took the money, didn't we?
Well, I thought so too. I'm not so sure that we
raised the fees.
Yeah, I don't recall raising the fees either. So
we took it out of their surplus.
Are we the same or not? It comes down to that.
I would say so, yes.
Do you concur?
Mm-hmm. So we don't need this.
We have to take them out. They're already taken care of in 1204.
So this doesn't need to be in here. Our staff says we've already taken care of it in another part of the bill.
In the other bill, you mean the licensing bill that we've...
Mr. Chair, and it's Senate File 1204 that's passed both the House and the Senate.
So we don't need to do this section then.
Right.
Works for me. Let's try 60.
Mr. Chair and members,
probably the same.
Section 60 is contained in Senate File 1204 that passed the House and Senate.
So staff would inform us, are we in the same situation where we don't need to do with that?
We don't need to do that.
Okay, so members, I guess we're monsters. We can cross those sections off and we won't need to operate in those. Okay? Let's move on to House Section 65, and I think with a modification on that one, we can remove the cost and we have an amendment. This would be House Section 65. Which should be on page 48 of the comparison report.
Yesterday, I've moved in. I can move A91, Mr. Chair.
Representative Weber moves the H1422A91 amendment. Representative Weber?
Mr. Chair, this strikes the requirement about a report. The department indicates they're willing to do this. And if the report goes away, they can do it in part of their normal work, and then there's no price.
And from the department's point of view, you concur that this would then remove, I think it was $55,000 or something like that was the original.
50, Mr. Chair.
Pardon me?
50.
50? $50,000. That would remove the fiscal note? Someone that can nod ahead for me?
Hand wave.
I see a head nodding affirmatively. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment said aye.
Mr. Chairman, I think the Senate would be prepared to accept this study with the understanding that the House would be willing to accept the study we have in our bill related to mental health and education providers, the task force.
Can we just hold on this then until that section, until we get that? I'm not remembering
sure,
that one specifically.
Fine.
But we'll, when we come to that, we can remind ourselves that we have this one in.
This is amended.
Let's go to Article 2. Article 2, House Section 25. This is the circumcision section. This would be on page 10 of the comparison report in Article 2. I think the difference was the House actually prescribes, except for religious purposes and medical necessity, that removes payment for circumcision in our public assistance program. I believe the Senate had prioritization.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the Senate is prepared to accept the House language on this. I would move adoption of in section 2 House, Article 2 House, section 25.
Senator Bergen moves adoption of House section 25. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Now let's move to section Senate section 32. And there is a section, this is the language on six-month period of eligibility that is identical. I think that would be probably the only section that we'd be able to deal with today, but we could deal with that if the Senate would like.
Yes, that would be fine. We'd just be separating out the period of eligibility from the issue of depreciation farm income. And
then we did have a date difference, and I believe we were using the Senate date on those. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So Senator Bergen would move in the Senate position on the six-month period in Senate section 32, and only that portion. Do I understand that motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. And then, likewise, in Senate section 32, we have a similar situation. Oops, I'm sorry. No. Senate section 43, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I just clarify? I know we took the six-month Senate language. I just want to make sure, did we take the depreciation part? We didn't take
we
that.
We did not take it. That's money tied to that. So no.
Oh, okay. So hold on that. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. You bet. Well, anyway, the next section then would be Senate section 43, which again has a similar provision that are identical in both the House and Senate.
And again, this would be on the six-month renewals members. So it would be the first paragraph on the comparison there. And I would move that along with the Senate date of August 1st.
Senator Bergen moves the Senate section in Senate section 43 dealing only with the six-month budget period. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. And then we have Senate Section 53 in Advisory Committee, I think, is a matching. Let's go to that and see, I think, for sure. Yeah, Senate Section 53, and there is a corresponding House Section 80. They're very similar. This is in the an Advisory Committee on the Non-Emergency Transportation Services. I believe the House, there's a little more permissiveness in the Senate language. The House requires it to be set up.
Different composition of this.
Yes, we do, yeah.
Mr.
Chairman. Representative Powell.
On that composition, the language here went over to the Senate as originally written. However, before we passed it on the House side, the disability community came to me and wanted to be included on this, and they spoke with the nursing home facilities, long-term care, and kind of traded a spot, and everybody was happy with that. And I believe that they still want to be part of this advisory committee, and I would urge that we move the House position on this. Both provisions are revenue neutral.
Yes, on the advisory committee.
Right.
Is there someone here from the nursing facility? It's okay? All right. We'll move adoption of the House provision then.
Senator Bergen moves adoption of the House Section 80 in the Senate Article 2, which on page 31 of the comparison report. You understand that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, in Article 3, Senate Section 9. And this is the Senate proposal which calls upon the Hospital Association to do the reporting. I think it's kind of a voluntary part on the Minnesota Hospital Association. Mm-hmm. And I believe there's an amendment here. Representative Abler, is it your amendment?
Yes, it is.
So Representative Abler moves Amendment A7. Can I explain the amendment? Just the Senate side? Well, it would be, I guess it has to be, doesn't it? Okay. I'm sorry, can you proceed?
Yeah, it just clarifies that the information is to Minnesota residents as opposed to, I don't think they've used Wisconsin data, but somebody was nervous that it would be not that. And they intended, I think, all along to make it a Minnesota website. It's just clarifying and, I think, technical.
Any questions to the amendment? This is not adopting the section yet. This is just to the amendment. No questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And now to the section. And given that amendment, the House would accept, so I'll move adoption of Senate... Never mind.
So, I would move Senate Section 9 in Article 3 as amended.
Ms. Bergen moves adoption of Senate Article 3, Section 9, and let's see, this... Yeah, this would be Section 9, because there's subdivisions above it, but just Section 9. All those in favor, I'm sorry, any discussion of amendment to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We can go to House Section, this is Article 4 now, members. Article 4, House Section 26. We at least have an amendment that would bring it into shape that the groups involved would want it. Whether or not we adopt it today is a separate section, a separate question. But Article 4, House Section 26.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, where are we now? We're in Article 4, what section?
This is Article 4,
House 26.
House Section 26.
Yeah. Get the Senate to this guy.
You jump around. So it's on page, it's on the comparison report on page 27, for members.
Mr. Chairman, is there, Mr. Chairman, is that, what's the page on the language?
R80.
R80, okay, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, okay, there you go. Oh.
Is this the request of the agents?
Mr. Chairman, if you're just trying to get this section in the shape you'd like it, I'll move the amendment.
Okay, that's all it's doing. I believe this is an agreement between the department and the providers, just in that shape. So it's on Bergen moves Amendment A83. Any discussion to that amendment? I think it moves the date out a bit. There's another phrase in here change as well. No discussion. All those in favor of Amendment A83 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Let's see, if I remember right, I believe this did have money attached to it as well, so we'd probably wait on the money items, but at least it's now in shape. Let's see, the next one in Article 4 would be Section 33.
Section
33? House Section 33, I'm sorry. Yeah. Just the next page. Page 28 in the side-by-side. As I understand this one, there is no cost for this one. Let's see. Wilkin, is this one of you familiar?
I haven't seen the amendment.
No, no, not the amendment. This is section.
Yeah, this is part of House File 80.
Yes.
Is there an amendment to it, Mr. Chairman?
No.
Okay. Well, we're not prepared to take this up today.
Okay. The next will be Article 5.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Before we go on to Article 5, I did have an amendment to correct something in Article 4 that we had adopted earlier.
Fair enough. Okay, let's go back to that.
And this would be on the PCA language. And Seth, can you help me identify what section it is in?
Mr. Chairman, the PCA language starts on page 7 on the staff comparison. It's sections 11 through 16 that were already adopted, and the A28 amendment that's coming around makes changes in a couple of those sections. It basically takes out references to a determination of medical necessity and talks about a doctor's statement of need. And this is budget neutral and satisfies various parties.
So I understand that this has been worked out between the health plans, the advocates, and the Department of Human Services. If all three of them could verify that, so we don't have to keep revisiting it, that would be helpful.
If, Mr. Chairman, if we could, this side of the table hasn't received a copy of the amendment.
Oh, we'll hold until you see it. Sorry.
Thank you. So I saw the advocates stand up and nod yes, and I saw the health plans stand up and nod yes.
We
had those two nodding yes once before, so I'd like to make sure the department is nodding yes.
And the department is nodding yes. We have three nods.
All right. What do you know?
Are there any no? I don't see any heads going the other way. Senator Berglund, Senator Berglund was an A28 amendment.
Mr.
Senator Berglund, there was some question at one point in time, because this is a savings item.
Yes.
And the House is very sympathetic to it. But there was some question that what we had adopted that might be less. Now, does this have any bearing on how much the savings that would be realized from that?
This
proposal?
Amendment leaves us where the tracking is at.
Okay, which is around $6 million, is it? Yeah. Did I hear a question,
Mr. Yes,
Weber?
Just a technical. What's the difference between a statement of need and medically necessary?
Representative Abler, I'll tell you something. This is like the biggest mystery of the century. We don't really know what the difference is, but this is what gets us where we need to be. So sometimes we don't always need to know everything, I guess.
I want to remember that answer.
Mr. Chair?
I want to use that from
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Baker, is your curiosity satisfied? Or?
I just have another question.
Mr.
So
Mr.
Baker, just work at the table when I come to your committee then with that explanation.
I was trying to hint that I might try it myself, but don't
Thank
push
you.
Your luck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think actually that I think people have come to the common understanding that PCA services do not fit neatly into that term medically necessary, but they are needed services. And so rather than confusing it with other medical services where medical necessity is appropriate to use, the language has been changed here just to indicate that a physician would provide a statement of need. Does that help?
Senator Berglund, I think it does, but you know, we've made somewhat light of it, but I have a hunch, and I think you're on to what I would have understood, that there is a little bit more to it than just wording, and I suspect this would be more from the advocate point of view, protecting people. If that's right, is there somebody who would like to sort of take a shot at explaining it to the group, just to give us a little bit more of a feel? Maybe not.
Eyes are rolling.
Well, a quick shot then. We won't belabor the point, but we may bump into this kind of thing in the future, and I think it might be helpful.
My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center. And, yes, I think your conversation is on point. These services now are prior authorized by a county public health nurse going into the person's home, and that is not really what a physician does. The physician's information is needed to be sure the person has a condition that means they need PCA service, but the specifics on how much they need are very determined by do they have steps, how far is it to the bathroom, et cetera, et cetera. So we think this language is a little more specific to what the physician should do.
Ms. Henry, who would be the one? I don't remember the entire, because we're just seeing the amendment here and I haven't turned back to it. Who makes the determination that there is a statement of need? Who's the one that, in the end, would make that call?
Mr. Chair, the physician has to determine that the person has a medical condition that results in a need for a PCA service. And the department is going to develop the form so that they are sure to get the information they need for the requirements of the Medicaid program. It's apparently going to be on the website, easily available, printed off, and then the physician will fill out the form so as not to have to spend a lot of time going over the architecture of the person's home, et cetera. And then the way that it works now is the county public health nurse has an extensive assessment with the person in their home. And that's where you really get down to how much help someone needs and for what.
Any further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
We have a motion before us, which is the A28 amendment. Any further discussion of that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And since we've already adopted that section, members, we don't need to readopt it. Now, we'd be going...
I interrupted you. You were going to Article 5.
Yeah, right, right. I just needed my little sheet that I had here. We're now moving to Article 5, and this would be Senate Section 5. And I think we've asked the department to come forward and review with us this. We tried to lay out kind of a picture of this, comparing the House and Senate sections.
Mr. Chair?
Oops, I'm sorry.
If I may, actually the House and the Senate had an identical rider, which was adopted. And in addition, the Senate also codified that language, which is a decision that needs to be made whether or not you want to codify the budget transfer for mental health restructuring. But the rider's already been adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, I believe that the department wanted it to be also codified just because so much of the restructuring that's in place is kind of dependent on this, and so they didn't want to end up in a situation sometime where we forget to do the rider and they would have
that. Can someone from the department just to come forward and confirm for us what your recommendation is?
Mr. Chairman, John Zockhill from the DHS Mental Health Division. This language has been in place for a couple of years now. It's been very effective in terms of our work with counties to make sure that services are developed that are most appropriate to client needs. One of the main criticisms that we've heard of the mental health funding system is that it's too complicated and that funding restrictions sometimes mean that people don't get the right services, and this has helped us address that concern. The difference between codifying it and having it in writers is that if it was codified, we would have the assurance that the authority would continue to be there after this coming biennium. That's particularly important if we're going to work on any long-term projects with the counties. For example, the Senate includes a provision to work on some changes at Anoka Metro Region Treatment Center into the following biennium, especially if we're to get into something like that. It's very important to know that we would have continued authority to have that budget flexibility.
Thank you. Now, this will be a little bit ahead, but maybe you'll be able to come back. There's some provisions in what would amount to Article 7, I guess the Senate Article 7 section. And they are House Articles 2 and then the 1 through 4 that appear to be related as well to mental health issues. Are you prepared to speak to those as well?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, between myself and my colleague from State Operated Services, I hope we could answer your questions.
Where are we?
This, members, this would be in Article 7. It's a little messy, so if you go to the comparison report, it begins on page 10. And there are a series of House articles, it's called Article 1, and there's Section 1, 2, 3, and 4, I believe, are the ones that would ask the department to review with us.
Mr. Chairman, the amendments in Article 2, House language, Sections 1 and 2, relate to projects that we have in the community now where state staff have been assigned to work with community agencies. And under the language that's in current law, it's been interpreted that only state staff can be assigned to work in the community, but we don't have any flexibility with the appropriations behind those staff. Mm-hmm. So it's been stated that this is in conflict with the budget flexibility language, and the language that is proposed here would make this consistent with the concept of budget flexibility.
So, Mr. Jaskal, do these things work together? Are they kind of like partners? They don't contradict each other, and they sort of complement each other?
That's correct.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jaskal, is that true when we get down here for the enterprise activities and the... I don't think the last one has anything to do with the community services, but does the enterprise activities have something to do with that?
That's right, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund. Section 3 goes with that. Section 4 is a different issue, the security hospital.
Okay. All right. So I think I understand it.
Look
at that both of them.
Okay, well, let's go back now. We'll just keep that page, but let's go ahead and deal then with the Senate Section 5. And I'm satisfied that I think the department would prefer it to be codified, and that's the only issue in that particular one. So I
Mr. Chair, just a question.
Paper?
And I don't, we're kind of going through some ground that the House didn't do a lot of work on it with the Sunoco thing. And if it's appropriate, would you maybe ask for anybody in the audience who has a concern just so we can know what we're voting on? And I'm not sure this one raises that level, but in some of these points, if that would be happy.
Yeah, I don't mean to move too fast through things at this
point. Just get to the policy.
But on Senate Section 5 wouldn't have anything to do with that.
Section
5
stands by itself.
Right.
So we're not getting into that.
But not to that this point, but just in the whole.
Yeah. I'll just catch this as we move along. I'll try to be sure to allow for an opportunity. But I don't think there's any objections, so we could move Senate Section 5.
I would so move.
Senator Berglund moves in Article 5, Section 5.
Mr. Chairman, that on the piece we got out, there's I think that's a typo on the top that says Article 2 is really 5, right?
Yes, you're right, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for members' sake, and thank you for pointing that out, on the side-by-side extra comparison that was just handed out, on the left side, that should be Senate Article 5 instead of what it says. Senator Berglund moved adoption in Senate Article 5 of Section 5. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, if it'd be appropriate at this time, the staff would like direction then if it would be okay to delete the rider, since we wouldn't need the rider. It'd be duplicative of the language we just adopted to be statutorily.
That would make sense, yes. Please do.
We included that in the motion to give you that direction.
Thank you. And then, Senator Berglund, members, we'd then go back to Article 7. and page 10 and 11 of the side-by-side comparisons, and we had previously had testimony on Article 2, Sections 1, 2, 3, and 4.
I would move in Article 7, the House language in Article 2, Section 1, Article 2, Section 2, and Article 2, Section 3.
Senator Berger moves adoption in Senate Article 7 miscellaneous, House provisions, Article 2, Section 1, Section 2, and Section 3. Any discussion to those items? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. 1, 2, 4. And Senator Bergman, just so I understood, the Article 2, Section 4 is in there. Were you preferring to hold on that one? That was giving flexibility to the commissioner?
I would like to hear some more about it. I'm sure that Senator Hottinger would, too.
Certainly. Is there someone here that can speak to that section?
Why it's needed, what you intend to do, and...
Please identify yourself for the budget and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Reuter. I'm the Administrative Officer for State Operated Services with the Department of Human Services. Unfortunately, for Section 4 of Article 2 of the House bill, the appropriate person is not here to testify about that particular issue or to answer your questions.
Well, maybe we could just hold it till Tuesday and come back to it then.
Yep. I think it would be good if someone could be here to to address that, because it's... I believe it's a non-money item, and we should make a decision one way or another, so we wrap up those sections. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'm really sorry. I didn't remember. It gets to be so many days around here. But in this language we just adopted in Article 5, Section 5 of the Senate, there was an amendment that some folks wanted us to consider. It's an A1 amendment, so maybe we could just look at it before we get too
that passed
far
out?
From it. Our staff has it.
I swear, I cannot find it. I cannot.
In this Section 5 of Article 5, we were talking about allowing the commissioner to make budget transfers from RTC line items to adult mental health community-based services. And this one would give them also the authority to transfer funds to increase medical assistance rates for services if the commissioner determines that they're critical to the mental health restructuring. So,
the testifiers had a chance to get a copy of the amendment, so maybe the department can give us the lead on this. Senator Bergman,
it's all permissive, so it's just in keeping with the restructuring. If in a situation where there's access problems that would cause the restructuring to have problems, that they could use that money also then to increase rates with the federal match.
I did have a little bit of a concern about making a commitment on rates, which is kind of a long-term ongoing commitment for us. I don't know how that would play in this, if these are transferred funds, whether they sometimes are one-time or ongoing, but please give us your reaction.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we don't have a problem with this language, but we would not use this authority unless the change was budget neutral going out into the following biennium also. So it's probably going to be pretty difficult to find a situation where we'd actually use it, but it's not a problem.
Well, let me ask a question. Maybe it's not a problem because you do the right thing. I don't know. The next person that's sitting in that chair may have a different philosophy. Would the department normally ask for, and I realize it's permissive, but would you normally ask for this kind of authority?
This is not a department request. Now, this is part of the language you just adopted,
right,
which says that the department can make budget transfers that do not increase the state share of costs.
Right.
So it would be within that.
My understanding, Mr. Zakel, is that what we're talking here about is RTC line items that would be transferred, and that would be an ongoing expenditure if we hadn't transferred it. So I don't think we're talking about adding tails here. Part of the concept of transferring the money to community-based services is to leverage MA match, so we're not in conflict there. And the only difference would be, up till now, you've only talked about transferring the money out for certain services. And what this would give you the ability to do then is, if you're having difficulty with service providers, to use it in the same way as you are for adding services. But I don't think it would have any tails involved in it. I mean, the money that comes with it had tails. So the idea of all of this is to be budget neutral.
Michelle, would you have a comment to this?
Mr. Chair and members, it is unclear to me at this time if we do pass this in statute as opposed to a rider, what timeline is associated allowed for the transfers for this particular purpose. The realignment of the chemical health programs has a defined time period that they're looking at, but if we put this in code, it allows it to happen at any time, and that may or may not go with the intent of this committee for that kind of permissive nature.
I think our intent was that some of these projects take longer than one biennium, and so the funding should be able to be used between bienniums. The department already has gotten statutory language to allow carryover that would continue and not cancel, so I don't see it much different than carryover that doesn't cancel, but just allows flexibility between the bienniums with the language we already adopted.
Madam Chair, Mr.
Michelle.
Chair, there are also other provisions that we have in riders that limit the amount that can be transferred or prohibit the amounts to be transferred for other accounts. And so my concern, or the point that is unclear, is what is the overall intent here, and are we being clear with the language that is in here?
Senator Bergman, can I request, this may be okay, I sort of feel like I need to have a chance to ponder it a bit more. You may be absolutely right, but it's kind of a new notion to me.
Sure, we'll just set this aside. And I think in regard to the earlier question, Mr. Chairman, I think the reason that this is different is because this is an ongoing effort that we believe is going to take a number of bienniums, and so it's appropriate to have it be statutory. In other cases, it's a more of a one-time need for carryover funds to get something started.
Yeah, and Michelle, you may have been asking questions, which we already adopted that section and made it statutory language, but if you have something, we can discuss that as well, because we'll come back to this section. So the only thing we had in front of us was this amendment.
Correct.
To include rates.
What we had adopted was a rider, which would have a timeline of a two-year time period, and now the movement here with this part in statute plus the amendment gives it a broader time period. It's an indefinite.
I understand that. We already took that action, though. Yep. Okay, thank you for your testimony. Let me ask, we have a section in Article 7, which was the Dakota County, I think it's Section 9, that was a Senate section. Okay. Are we not ready then? Hold on. We got it here too.
I don't know. I thought they had.
Oh.
Okay, well then we don't. I thought we had an agreement.
We don't have an agreement.
We don't have an agreement. We don't have an agreement after all, so I guess we're all
in. All right, we'll just hold on that.
We don't time yet. We'll give it by June.
What?
Okay.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
I would like next, we've had some discussion, I believe, kind of a walkthrough by the Senate on the CPE proposal, the disproportionate, and I've asked if there's someone here from the Department of Human Services, mostly just kind of a matter of fact. This is a fairly complicated issue. I know there are some, as we discuss this, as we will probably discuss in the future, I want to make sure that we are considering all the factors, and frankly, every day I sort of run into yes, no, whether or not it goes against the upper payment limits, whether or not there's other factors. So I had asked, is there someone here from the Department of Human Services that would be able to? Oh, Ms. Trogberg, here you are. Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, if it'd be okay, I'd like to ask someone from the Hospital Association to join in.
That'd be fair enough. Sure.
What are they doing?
We're talking about the certified public expenditure proposal.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brian Osberg. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Healthcare, the Department of Human Services. This issue has raised concerns with us as it's been developed. As this proposal has developed over time, it's raised concerns with us. I need to give the committee both some background on this question. The issue of intergovernmental transfers, which is the ability for us to use local health care expenditures to match up against federal money, has been a concern to the federal government, to CMS. In fact, we're on a list of 15 states in this country that they're very concerned about how we go about matching up federal monies using local public expenditures. We're trying to find out from CMS exactly the nature of those concerns, and as to what possible options may exist in terms of our ability to match up against federal money using local expenditures. So that's something that we need to keep in mind as we approach this issue. Now, disproportionate share payments, federal Medicaid payments, for purposes of compensating for providers, especially hospitals, seeing uninsured individuals. It's separate payments in Medicaid itself, but it's from the Medicaid pot. The DISH payments, traditionally, we're low DISH state, it's recalled. We have about $60-some million in DISH payments to the state of Minnesota. But the federal government, 2 years ago, gave us an opportunity, as other states, to match against some additional DISH money that the Congress made available. Now, what's important to understand is that in order for us to match that federal money, we have to have a state match of our own, of course, 50% state match. Now, and that would make it cleaner if we had the funds available to match up against those federal DISH monies. Certainly make it much cleaner. Instead, what's being proposed here is using what's called certified public expenditures. These are local expenditures by counties and by the University of Minnesota for purposes of matching up against the federal DISH money. Now, there's complication around that. There's accounting complications. There's other issues. Right now, though, we have, it's our understanding that CMS has accepted the use of certified public expenditures in other states for purposes of matching up against this federal money. So there is a precedent of doing that. It's just more difficult to audit over time, to track over time. And that's not the biggest part of our concern. We think we can solve, perhaps, a lot of those issues as to how we track these certified public expenditures. We think we can take care of that. Again, it's uncertain whether or not CMS is going to have concerns about this in the future. Now, the bigger issue that we have, though, this is a long way of getting me to the point, I realize, but the bigger issue that we have is what we understand the proposal to be now, and that is, not only does the proposal maximize the DISH money that's available for the federal government, but also it goes over to match up against the medical assistance, the Medicaid money. Now, when you do that, so it's an effort to both match DISH and Medicaid. This is important to understand. Now, when you do go over and match the Medicaid money, then you're affecting what's called the Medicare upper payment limit. I know this gets really complicated, but the Medicare upper payment limit is the limit by which we can pay hospitals through our medical assistance program. We cannot pay hospitals in this state more than what Medicare would otherwise pay. Medicare, of course, is the federal program for the elderly and disabled. So we got to be careful about that upper payment limit. In fact, what we've done in the past is to make sure that we have utilized the room in that limit. We have passed these intergovernmental transfer arrangements, these IGTs, and we put into place, into statute, formulas by which we distribute those money. Now, let me give you an example where the money goes from that upper payment limit arrangement. They go to outstate hospitals, the 16, so-called 16 DRGs you've been hearing about this past few months, to augment the payment to rural hospitals in 16 DRGs, 16 conditions. DRGs are diagnostic-related groups. There are specific conditions by which we determine how a hospital gets paid. We also provide, through that arrangement, payments through a health department to rural hospitals for capital grants. We also provide community clinic payments, rural health clinics and community fairly qualified health clinics, I believe, as well. So there's a formula in statute as to how we distribute that money. We also provide for federal match of our medical education arrangement, what we call MERC. This is how we finance medical education. Goes back to our teaching hospitals to provide, of course, medical education to support our programs over time. Now, what happens is that when this proposal comes into play, that potentially, though now I understand MHA, of course, does not necessarily want to displace medical education or community clinics, but they can speak to that. But this changes the formula. In our mind, we think we need to have this discussion about how best to use this money in the context of the budget targets and the cuts themselves. We think that this issue needs to be discussed in the context of what you need to do to balance your budget and to reach your target. Because this can mitigate against eligibility cuts, it can mitigate against provider payments. In other words, we need to be more open, more flexible as to how we use this money. Right now, the money is going to be used in the form of paying back inpatient services to hospitals. That might be appropriate. That might be what your decision is. But we think that there needs to be a discussion as to what extent we should consider other ways of using this money to provide health services to people in the state. Now, I hope I didn't completely confuse you, but that's where the department stands on this issue at this point.
Senator Bigler.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Osberg, you're talking to us like we have a state match. Last time I looked, we didn't have a state match to get this money. The proposal is to use certified public expenditures, which are local hospital dollars, being spent in public hospitals to match this. So how in the world could we use, you know, the money then to offset eligibility cuts or do all these other things you're suggesting we might consider doing with it when, you know, hospitals are certifying this public expenditure, and they don't have to do that. They don't have to do that. That's not your money. That's their money.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, you remember that part of the expenditure calculation is also GAMC costs. And the state, of course, has GAMC payments for those costs. So I think the state does have certainly a right to discuss how those money should be used, because it does relate to the costs that they incur for general assistance medical care, notwithstanding the payment they receive from the state. So there is a possibility, and we've had some discussions with CMS as to what extent we could actually recognize our current payment for people in GAMC for purposes of matching up against this DISH money. So that possibility does exist. We're trying to finalize feedback and decision from CMS as to that possibility. But I think that given that, I think it is appropriate for us to consider the other uses of this money.
Chairman and Commissioner Osberg, if I can get this straight, you're rubbing on the genie bottle here, trying to get a genie to appear by way of the federal government giving us permission to do something that we've never, ever been able to do before. And because you're rubbing on the bottle, hoping something comes out of it, we should consider a different proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, I'm suggesting that you should defer on this issue until you get to the question of how we're going to solve a larger problem as to how we're going to meet your targets and to how you're going to mitigate against any potential cuts. So I think, yes, we're suggesting that you keep your options open at this point and not and address this issue when you get to the fiscal impact. Because this does have to take consideration as we look at the potential cuts and eligibility, and we look at provider cuts and other things to balance the budget. I think that this issue needs to be considered alongside that.
Well,
sorry, Bob.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Osberg, believe me, it looks like we're going to be here a few days. So, like I said, if you get an answer in a few days, let us know. But in the meantime, I really just have to say this honestly to you. I don't think it's fair for you to come in and derail a serious proposal on the part of the Senate when you don't even know for sure if there is a possibility of having an alternative proposal. And that's what it feels like. You're derailing this. And, members, I think it's important for us to understand if we miss this opportunity, it's gone. It's gone. Now, I understand the problems that the proposal that isn't even in front of this committee might have. There have been discussions about, modifying the proposal, but there have been no amendments to do that so far. So the proposal in front of us is the original proposal that the Senate adopted. And I think if we are going to modify the proposal, then any problems it creates have to be addressed. But, in the governor's proposal, we've got a 5% hospital ratable reduction here. Certainly, if a 5% ratable reduction is adopted, there's more room on the Medicare side than there would be otherwise. So, I think everything needs to be taken kind of together here in terms of what we actually end up doing with all the parts of this.
Commissioner Harper, can you comment to the sort of the notion that the timeline for use is now, we would lose that opportunity if we don't do it now? Do you have any insight on that?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Our understanding is that we don't have to necessarily spend it today. We don't lose the opportunity if we don't match up against the dish money now. So that is, based on our discussions with CMS, that is not necessarily take it now or lose it. We don't believe that's the case.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Brooklyn.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Osberg, do you really believe that with the discussions about budget balancing at the federal level and, the various proposals to make reductions, that this money, if it hasn't been claimed for 2 years in a row, will be left on the table to be claimed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, that may be a possibility, but at this point, the law does not suggest it has to be taken up now, that indeed it would be available to us in future years.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bergen,
Mr. Osberg, I was never purporting to try to distort what the existing law is. I believe we have 3 years under the existing law, and this is year two. But wouldn't a reasonable person, when we know that we are seeing budget cuts at the federal level, kind of assume that maybe the federal government would think any state after 2 years that hadn't claimed this was not interested, and it would be a quick and easy budget savings to take if you're trying to balance the federal budget?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, again, that's not the impression we're getting from CMS at this point. And so we do believe we have options potentially available to us, and as I said, we hope to bring back to you very soon some other possibilities, at least a clarification around other possibilities.
Yeah, I think, Commissioner Osberg, that'd be pretty important. I think Senator Berger is right. I don't know how much longer we'll be around here. But let me, and I know Ms. Krinke, you'd like to speak too, but if I can just pose at least one other question, then Representative Powell actually had a question. When I first saw this, my reaction was, on a standalone basis, we might argue about specific distribution, but that's a piece of cake. That's easy to negotiate that. Which hospitals, how much, that kind of thing. But it seemed to be very independent of any other consideration. And if I'm hearing you right, I'm hearing you bringing up issues where there might be some connection, there might be some effect on our Merck funding, there might be some effect on our community clinic funding, there might be some effect on capital grants. Am I hearing you correctly? And it's hard for me to make that connection because I know this is kind of messy stuff, but did I hear you right?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Now, it also could be addressed. We have not seen any language up to this point that does address that, though hospital associations expressed to us that it's not their intent necessarily to squeeze out medical education. But we have to, it certainly has to be a lot of refinement of this proposal before there's comfort in that, and also in terms of how money is distributed to other providers. I think a lot of work has to be done in order to make sure that...
I'm really anxious to make sure. I have seen something in the language kind of for Merck protection, but that's about the only little piece I've seen is that one. Senator Bergen?
Mr. Chairman, just so we can be clear, what is in the Senate bill today doesn't create any of those problems. Isn't that correct, Commissioner?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, yes, that's correct, because that only relates to the DISH piece. Once it came over to the upper limit, over to the medical assistance payment matching, then that's when issues have come up.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, if and when that amendment is offered, then we would have to have a discussion about whether it creates a problem, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, my understanding is that the amendment has been made available and has been. We've seen that amendment that does this very thing. So it's been.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bergen,
and Commissioner, you might have seen an amendment. I'm sure there's dozens of them floating around out there in the audience.
There it is.
Have I offered that amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, no, you have not. Not that I'm aware of.
Commissioner, is that before this committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, it is not, but the proposal that we understand the NHA has is what's being presented, and that's where we have concerns.
And Commissioner Osberg, to that point, the proposal that is in the PAPU that we currently have, then, it would not risk those areas that you mentioned? That's only if something more would happen.
Right. Mr. Chairman, it only happens if they move over the using CPEs to match up against medical assistance money and move it over to the upper limit. There's still some issues around CPEs, but there's issues in general with the federal government around IGTs and all these alphabet arrangements that we have.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Well, I think Representative Powell had a question before, but let me allow Ms. Krinke had a couple of times there, and perhaps I should allow you to respond to some of the things.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I would just like to clarify just a couple things that Assistant Commissioner Osberg said. The federal government is very clear that DPA payments must be made only to hospitals. And that is what this money was for in the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003. This additional money is a DPA payment that is to be made to hospitals. So we think that the money has to be used for hospital payments. The second thing that Mr. Osberg mentioned was that the department was concerned that if these certified public expenditures were not approved, that there would be risk. And we have offered up that we would certainly be willing to take comfort, you know, kind of comfort language that could be easily drafted that said these additional hospital payments would only be made once the money was received by DHS. So that these additional hospital payments would only be made once the department receives the money so that DHS would not be, quote-unquote, on the hook for this. So for the department to raise the issue that there's risk involved here, we see that there is no risk involved here at all to the department. The third point that I'd like to make is that we've worked very hard to work on these certified public expenditures this year, knowing that the state was in a really tight budget situation and that we were not going to be able to come up with the state match. And that is why we pursued this avenue of the certified public expenditure. We were aware that other states had gone this route and that, quite frankly, the federal government had looked more favorably on certified public expenditures than they had on IGTs. So we thought that this was a good mechanism for us to, if I can say this term, help solve our own problem and try to come up with as much federal dollars as we could. So.
Thank you. Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll go back to the first part of your testimony there, Commissioner. You mentioned that perhaps these monies could be used in other places, perhaps more to your liking, to our liking. But what gives you any reason to think that these public entities that are putting up the money to leverage this $50 million would pull their money back off the table? I believe they probably would. So if we're going to be able to leverage $50 million, it would seem to me that we can perhaps argue about whether it's a good idea or not, but the fact that you think perhaps this money could be used for other means, I don't think is very realistic, because I don't think the money would be there in that case.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Powell, that's why we're examining other possible sources for the match. But also, you have to understand that part of the certified public expenditures by the local entities are JAMC costs, which are paid for through the JAMC program the state provides, 100% state payment. So I believe that we do have a right at the table to talk about how best these monies to be used. And to correct Ms. Cranky on this issue, we have been instructed by CMS that we are not restricted to using dish money for just purposes of paying hospitals for inpatient services. Other states have used dish money for primary care and for other purposes. We have a clear understanding from CMS that possibility does exist.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Powell,
one more follow-up. If using CPEs has been a good idea, I mean, we're late in the day here. Where's been your proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Powell, it's a function of getting final torture with CMS. And just like 2 years ago, when the issue came down to the availability of federal money to help mitigate against some of our problems, it's down to the wire. And I'm just indicating to you that possibility exists. I'm not necessarily suggesting that you defer or delay your deliberations around these issues. You have a timetable that's driven not by CMS or by us. So I'm not suggesting that you wait until we have but I just want to let you know that possibility does exist, and we hope to be able to articulate something as to some response, some possible alternative in the near future.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would like to reiterate some of the things that Representative Powell said. I think that's quite insightful, as a matter of fact, whether or not that match would even be available. I think that that's something I have not thought of, and as soon as he said it, I realized, wow, that's really true, too, because I have to say that I don't know if I am more amazed or appalled. As I listen to your testimony, I'm fluctuating between amazement and being appalled. I mean, this is what we've been working on like crazy to try to help the state, and it's, as I've mentioned before, Senator Grassley's amendment to help the Midwestern states that don't get the federal dollars coming back in. And the dish money, I still call it dish, it's DPA now, I guess, that does not count against the Medicare upper limit. And so we are totally safe bringing that money in. I mean, I cannot believe that we're even thinking about anything else when it is so urgent right now. Go ahead and find whatever you can to bring money up against the, find it and bring it against the Medicare upper payment limit for the DRGs and for the rural hospitals and for Merck. But please don't give anybody any doubt about the importance of bringing this money in under the Grassley Amendment for the short window of time that we have. We've already missed half of it, of our eligibility window.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lurie, I'm not arguing against the dish part of this. What I'm arguing about is the concern that we have when it gets over to the Medicare upper payment limit, when we have formulas already developed as to how we distribute those money in terms of community clinics and microeducation. That's when this thing gets complicated, and that's when we got involved in this issue on a policy perspective. Up to this point, we've been working on the technical side, developing the DISH piece. We're concerned about what's called the upper payment limit piece, the medical assistance piece. That's where I think, I just want to bring to your attention, I think the committee needs to sit down and understand exactly the potential impact of what we currently fund through that arrangement. And that's, so it went beyond the original. As, again, as Assembly Bergen's point, the amendment's not in front of you, but we wanted to bring that to your attention. That is the intent, is from what we've been told.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow up.
Certainly.
If I am wrong, I hope someone would correct me. It is my understanding that the DISH money does not count against the Medicare upper payment limit.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lurie, you are absolutely right. It stopped there. You're absolutely right. This issue does not stop there. The issue says using certified public expenditures to go over and maximize or match up against medical assistance money, which is in the upper payment limit. That's where it gets fuzzy, and that's where it gets concerning in terms of how we relate to CMS and how we distribute these monies throughout the state. That's where the policy implication becomes great.
And Mr. Chairman, this is where Representative Powell's observation becomes astute.
What are they doing?
Mr. Chairman?
Hi, Logan.
I think Ms. Krinke has a comment she'd like to make.
Ms. Krinke?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as the Assistant Commissioner has mentioned, this does get a little tricky because there is an opportunity to double the DISH money that is available to Minnesota, but then it does have to count against your upper payment limit. So, Senator, it's a little tricky here because, you know, Lori's right that if it is a straight DISH payment, it does not have to count against your upper payment limit. If you want to double that amount of money, it does have to count against your upper payment limit. So Commissioner Osberg is correct in some of his statements saying that this would put pressure on IGT3 if we double the money in order to leverage our federal maximum dollars.
Senator Berglund, to that point?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and the other part of the question that I raised is under the governor's budget, there's a reduction. So if there's a reduction, then there's more room against the Medicare upper limit. So,
Ms. Krinke?
What Senator Berglund has stated is the upper payment limit is a very, very fluid number. You don't know what your Medicare payments are to the state. You don't know what your MA rates are. We don't know how much of the MERC is going to have to be assigned to hospitals versus to clinics. So your upper payment limit number is constantly shifting based on lots of factors, some of which the legislature controls here and some of which Congress controls. So to say exactly how much room is in your upper payment limit varies a lot. What we are trying to do is maximize our federal dollars under our upper payment limit.
Ms. Krinke, if I'm understanding right, as it's in front of us now, it's strictly DISH. The prospect of running into these upper payment limits is not there with just this. And somehow this comes up because we're talking about an amendment of some sort which could get a better match, a more enriched match. Is someone planning to do that? Is it or not going to be in front of us?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the way the bill left the Senate floor, it is a straight DISH payment that does not count against our upper payment limit.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
we wouldn't be spending, you know, the last 15 minutes talking about something that's not in front of the committee unless there had been discussions about it. There have been discussions about it. And obviously, if we can use money that we get from the federal government without having to put any state money into it to leverage more money, one obviously wants to explore that. But I haven't offered that amendment here because I understand that there needs to be more work done on it. I understand that it ties into where we go with the governor's hospital cut that the Senate has not made. And I understand that when I bring it forward, I want to be able to answer the concerns that Assistant Commissioner Osberg has raised if they are still valid concerns. So, you know, I'm not offering an amendment today.
Well, thank you, Senator Berlin. And I think because it's a possibility, perhaps there's some value, though, in having had some discussion, because I, even as much as sometimes I understand these things, these are nuances that aren't obvious. So we at least are aware. If something comes up, I think we would be aware that probably more discussion would be needed as a, at a minimum. Maybe in conclusion, I don't know if you know Ms. Krinke or Assistant Commissioner, I've seen different numbers under sort of the current proposal, because it all is amount, it comes down to how much can we get certified. Do we have any updated numbers to know what ballpark we're in? Ms. Krinke?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the problem is not how much we can certify. The problem is how much is available in DISH upper payment limit, how much federal money is available. We have enough in certified public expenditures to leverage all that is available to us. The problem is that we have an opportunity, we have a chance to double the DISH payments. There's about, it's my understanding, about $25 million for the biennium if we don't try to double it.
I guess that's what I was trying to get at, Ms. Krinke, is trying to set aside the possibility. We've now had enough discussion to know there's a possibility of doubling it, but without it, in the $25 million range, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Senator Bergman?
And Mr. Chairman, part of the reason that it's not more is because when you use a certified public expenditure, you really have to have twice as much as you're trying to match. And so, you know, then when you learn that you might be able to use what you get back to leverage another federal dollar, that kind of offsets the liability you have of having to have twice the certified public expenditure to get $1, you need two certified public expenditure dollars. So that is part of the reason why that discussion has been taking place.
Well, I think it's been very helpful. At least where I'm coming from, I mean, it would be very hard to resist the possibility of being able to help out some of these critical hospitals if we can do it in a way that works. I mean, I never had an opposition to that. I do recognize, though, that sometimes it's far more complicated than you want it to be, and that's kind of why I wanted a little of this discussion. I think it's helpful to all of us to hear some of this discussion. And it's been really good that you've all agreed. And well, maybe not quite. But I think it's been helpful, though, to hear it. So we shall see what happens from here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Bergman, if you will, I think in maybe the time we have remaining, because I think we've done pretty much the things that we can do that aren't tied to money. It doesn't mean we couldn't have some good discussions. You and I talked about this. Probably some sections like the medically necessary prior authorization sort of whole collection. There's a number of them. We probably need to have a discussion just like here. But I think it would be helpful. The Senate did put sort of an offer on the table in some of the target discussions. And if you would be open to, it might be helpful. I understood you have maybe some handouts that we could do, and we could walk through that.
I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman. We can get the handouts for people. We have two sheets. One is just kind of a little description, what the goal is and what the premises are and how generally the proposal works. And Mr. Chairman, well, maybe I should wake up. People are done milling around.
Please don't run over. Every year, I think there's got to be a better way.
Mr. Chairman, if somebody doesn't get one who wants one, you can get it at my office later.
I would ask for a little bit of order. I'm sorry if there's not enough copies right now. We can, as Senator Bergman's offered, give copies later, and I apologize for not having sufficient. As a matter of fact, maybe we could have a page or somebody that could go out and see if we can get them back in time. And then what I would ask, if we do come back, rather than people rushing to, if you'll stay in your place, we'll have them come by and pass them out to you. this kind of chaos is not exactly helpful to the process. If you'd all take your seats in the back, we'll allow Senator Bergman to proceed. Do all the members have copies?
Mr. Chairman, a couple of caveats before I begin. First of all, when this proposal was developed, there was not like a target number we were trying to get at. It was a proposal where we sat down and thought about how are there other ways to solve this issue that's before us? And by the issue, I mean the issue of, you know, having more and more Minnesota Care people going into general fund, especially general assistance medical care, instead of being in Minnesota Care. So that was the issue. That was the premise of the work done on this. I might just also say that at least when we had Mr. Hoffman in front of my division, trying to figure out why we keep getting higher numbers in this program. I mean, this is a program where, you know, you can't even make $500 a month and be in it, and certainly we're not getting huge numbers of increases of people in that category. So why are we seeing these huge numbers that are, you know, going practically straight up the chart of people in the program? And Mr. Hoffman said it wasn't new people. It was people coming in and out and in and out and in and out. And there was a lot more in and out than there had been previously. So that was another thought behind this proposal.
Senator Bergman, you're speaking specifically of GAMC then.
Right.
In that regard. Yeah.
In and out of GAMC.
Yeah.
People get, you know, have a health care crisis, end up in the program, get some medical help, go back, you know, get more hours or go back to work, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they're back in the program and they're sick again because they're going out of the program without medical care to follow them. So,
Senator Bergman, if I may, I think I have a sense kind of in leading into it about the budget side of it and target side of it. However, to the extent that you can, I mean, I certainly, at least on my side, feel like we're going to, maybe we have to give help to leadership almost in terms of moving towards. So to the extent that these actions give us opportunities to reduce total expenditures from the Senate position, those kind of things, just help us to point those out as we go.
I'll get to the budget page after I get through the proposal,
that's
Mr.
fine.
Chairman.
Thank you.
So that's kind of the background. You know, could we do this thing we have that we call general assistance better? Could we do something to deal with the growing numbers of entries into the program? And couldn't we deal with the problem that, you know, some people that have been in Minnesota Care now with Health Match would be going into GMC instead? So the goal of the proposal, one of the first goals of the proposal was to try to provide people with an ongoing medical home rather than having them in and out and in and out of GMC where they don't really have a medical home. They just have a place that they crash when they have a medical crisis. So that was the first goal, to provide a medical home. And the next goal was to think about, you know, whether we would be preventing healthcare costs in the program if we had ongoing and consistent care through this medical home. And whether, you know, by providing a way for people to get used to being in a program like Minnesota Care, whether we could, you know, keep them there then instead of having them in general assistance medical care. So the proposal divides the general assistance medical care population into two groups. And the program would remain unchanged for one group, and that group would be people who currently receive general assistance, who receive a GRH grant, or who are applying for it or in the process of waiting to receive word about SSI or SSIDI. We kind of consider those people to be people that are not employable. So we didn't want them to have a different program. For the others, they would They would come in to GMC through the GMC door they come into now, since most of them arrive in a state of medical crisis. And at the time they apply, they also would be applying for Minnesota Care at the same time. And they would then have 2 months of general assistance medical care while the state is processing their Minnesota Care application. They all are eligible for Minnesota Care. We know that based on the standards that we use for GMC. So if they were eligible for GMC for the 2 months, they're going to be eligible for Minnesota Care. So they go into Minnesota Care, and they are given 6 months then of kind of a bridge period of time where they would not have a premium, and they would continue in the Minnesota Care program then. Then part of the proposal also is moving away from this benefit set for people without children in Minnesota Care, because this program would bring a lot of new people into the Minnesota Care program without children. And we know that the benefit set has a lot of problems. People not able to get diabetes test strips, people with chronic conditions losing medications in the middle of the year, losing their doctor appointments, people with diabetes not being able to get vision care, get their eyes tested, as we know is one of the things you're supposed to do. So the benefit set would be changed back under this proposal. The proposal would go into effect on January 1st of 07. That's the soonest the department said they could do this because of the health match issues and the time it would take to get this conversion to take place. We believe that this proposal then would give these individuals seamless coverage. The proposal would be one where we have enough money in the Minnesota Care Fund to cover this. We would not be displacing anyone who's in the Minnesota Care program currently, so there'd be no eligibility cuts.
Senator Brewer, if we could,
maybe there are some questions about this, and then we could move to the fiscal note.
The you have something called, Senator Berglund, in the current enrollee, I guess it's actually mentioned in the place, something called Minnesota Care Basic Plus One. What does that mean? It's a benefit set, apparently. Minnesota Care Basic Plus One benefit set.
I'm not sure what that term means. I think that's a term that DHS has come up with. But under the proposal as we gave it to them, it is for the Minnesota Care. Most of these people are without children. They'd be going into the Minnesota Care program for people without children. And the benefit set would be restored to the benefit set that we had before the last biennium. And is that what you're calling it? Okay, that's what they're calling it.
So, Senator Berglund, that would mean that well, notwithstanding the eligibility percent, now this would be things like the $5,000 outpatient cap, the $500 dental, the
durable medical equipment,
those kinds of things. So it'd be all restored to the pre.
You know, you can't see an optometrist, you can't see a psychologist. Those benefits would be restored.
Okay, so that would be the pre-2003 then.
Right.
Okay.
Then I guess we can go back through the fiscal note in detail if people want, but the last page has the fiscal summary on it, and I think that might be the best place to start from. Again, looking at the fiscal note, the impact to the general fund in 2007 would be $67.4 million. Part of the reason we don't have larger savings during this biennium again is because we're not starting at the beginning of the biennium. And that's, I guess, not possible, according to DHS, to start sooner.
But if you look in fiscal year 08 and 09 then, you see we have in each year over $200 million of savings to the general fund. And then to Minnesota Care, we have it listed out, but the total Minnesota Care impact would be 13.2 in 06, 97.5 in 07, and then 226.9 and 260.8 in 08 and 09. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess the idea of this is to create more of a seamless program between GMC and Minnesota Care to give people who are going to be returning to the world of work once their medical episode is under control, to give them one program, not two, that they could choose to be in, and to create a medical home, a seamless system, a mechanism for providing the good primary preventive care on an ongoing basis so that they wouldn't be needing to have these medical crises that we're bringing them into GMC. And there are considerable savings, I think, in terms of the general fund. I think there are also, I think it will curb the growth of the number of people that otherwise would have been needing this type of program.
In terms of savings, Senator Bergman, looking at that final summary, what I'm seeing, I'm assuming that the $13.2 million from the first year of the buy-in, because of the what we just talked about a moment ago about the benefits being turned back to the pre-2003, and that happens earlier than the GAMC to Minnesota Care switch. Is that, did I read that correctly? Is that
yeah.
what that is? Okay. Then just to kind of summarize, and because I think, what is the third column? I'm looking for the... No, I guess it's not. There isn't a column that is a 2006-2007 total. But if I looking at the combination...
I mean, most of it's in the 2007 column.
I understand. But if I look then at the effect across general fund and healthcare access fund combined, there would be a net cost increase of $13.2 million in 2006 and a net cost increase of $30 million in the second year of the next biennium. Am I correct in those things?
Mr. Chairman, yes. They don't quite net out the same because, you know, general assistance medical care has been ratably reduced in the last biennium, and so the payments are different in the two programs. But providers don't lose out because we're going to pay them a little more than we did under the other program.
Well, Senator Bergman, I'd have to say, if the money were around, the notion, and we've actually had conversations about this, I think we actually had conversations about some of this notion in 2003 when we were considering the possibility of reducing or eliminating GAMC, and we talked a lot about the possibility of a superior medical home like you're talking about, I think is a good idea. But the problem with your proposal comes down to dollars. I mean, that's if we're going to, and I think we almost have to consider expenditures combined between the two of them, and we're going to spend $43.5 million more than where we are now with the Senate, and the Senate's currently at some pretty high numbers. We're moving in the wrong direction in terms of trying to reconcile our numbers. So I was hoping when we said this, because I, to be honest with you, I've not had a chance to look at this, so this I'm just catching up. But it appears to me as we're spending actually more between the funds. Senator Burton?
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct in part because we have this rationing system for health care for people without children in Minnesota Care. Obviously, it would not be my intent to bring a whole new group of people into that terrible benefit set and subject them to practically losing their health care for those who have chronic conditions in the middle of the year. So, I mean, you know, I think that is one of the trade-offs. But I point out that the
Minnesota Care Program has enough money in the fund to do this and to keep coverage for everybody that we have in there today. So it does provide relief to the general fund, which I think is what the House and the administration were looking for, something that was not included in the Senate proposal that came into the conference committee. So we don't think we should be raiding the Minnesota Care Fund to spend on other general fund expenditures. This doesn't do that. It is truly a restructuring, and one that makes good policy sense, isn't being done just to kind of trade funding off between the two funds. So we can afford to do this, and it does reduce and bring us closer together in terms of our general fund numbers, which is, you know, really and truly what we're trying to get to at the end of the day. Minnesota Care is a dedicated fund. We know how much is in that fund. We know what the target for that fund is, and we can afford to do this. It provides relief to the general fund. It meets several goals that we have in different directions around the table.
Representative Wilkin?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, we don't even have a target yet. And I don't think our target's going to allow for another $43 million to be shoveled in when you... We're going to have a target that includes Healthcare Access Fund, General Fund, TANF. I don't see where this money's coming from.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Bradley, just so we can be clear, this is not additional. This is, you know, the moving back to the full coverage in Minnesota Care is in the Senate proposal that came in the Congress committee. So we're moving closer because, yes, we do cover that in here, but we get this very large general fund savings as well, which we didn't have coming into the conference committee.
Representative Wilkin?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, I don't know what the source of revenue is that the Senate is relying upon. The Senate tax bill was voted down overwhelmingly on both sides of the aisle in the House. And we can sit here until the end of June talking about kind of a fantasy world of where we're going to be spending additional money. But pretty soon we're going to have to come down to it and figure out what we're going to do to balance the budget. And we're not going to have this kind of money sitting around this committee, and we're going to have to hit some kind of realistic target.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berglund,
and Representative Wilkin, as a courtesy to this committee, because I was asked to present this to the governor and his staff yesterday, I am presenting it to this committee. I don't think it's necessary to debate the proposal. The presentation is for information.
And I think that's fair enough. I did ask. Representative Wilkin probably is stating, however, the obvious, which is at least probably above my pay grade. I'm not sure. But somewhere along the way, we are going to be getting to a point, and I think we're almost there, and this probably just serves notice to leadership or to whoever is going to make decisions, that we are going to have to get something reconciled. At this point, aside from the proposal, and Senator Berglund, thank you, and I think it was helpful to hear the proposal and have an idea sort of what some of the Senate objectives are. But now stepping a little bit beyond that, if I may somewhat editorialize, we have at this point, the House has a proposal that is balanced to revenue because it's based on current revenues. The governor has made an offer that hasn't obviously passed, but it's at least an offer, that would put another $100 million into the Health and Human Services budget. It might be helpful for us at least to sort of see, well, what would be done with that if we're given it. Maybe it's getting a little bit cart before the horse, but we are at a point where it's going to be very hard for us to do much more resolution without having, as Representative Wilkin rightfully points out, the collective targets for General Fund, Healthcare Access Fund, and TANF funds. And I'm certainly don't mean to connect to what your proposal is in saying that. That's probably stating the obvious, but it's certainly becoming more obvious to me as I've tried to work through the budget and see what alternatives there may be, that we are far enough apart in our numbers. That's just stating the obvious. That's just reality. and sooner or later we've got to come. Senator Hottinger.
Mr. Chairman, I've been listening interestingly to this conversation, and with even more interest, if possible, to the discussion that went on in the House today relating to Representative Olson's resolutions, which I was frankly surprised the Democrats didn't support, but I don't know the politics of your body. But I did think an issue came up that, given Senator Berkman's proposal here, are we to look at the governor as speaking for the House, or is the House going to be expressing independence in the discussions about the targets?
Senator Hottinger, if you look at the House bill, you will find many places of significant difference from the governor. The House speaks for itself. The House has talked about, however, collectively, reaction to the governor's, I think, compromise offer. Not where I want to be, but at this point, we all know we've got to be compromised. To the extent that many of us have sympathy to that offer and are willing to consider it, I don't consider that an endorsement of all of you. You can see it's different in the bill. So the House has its own positions.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, I certainly understand we start out from that position. It's the Speaker hasn't seemed to express any independence from the governor, and I was hopeful that those of you who are looking at the independent role of the House are going the direction that you just spoke, so I appreciate that comment.
And Senator Hottinger, I think it probably depends on which subject you're being talked about. He's made it very clear in public settings that the House will continue to stand for COLAs, for nursing homes and group homes. We will continue to stand for things, many of which were not in the original governor proposal. So even there, now, as I said, on the one subject of supporting the governor on his compromise offer, I think it's fair to say that he has stood with him on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Fair enough.
Mr.
President Weber?
Well, just to that same point, and Senator Hottinger, I voted yes today, I thought we should discuss it. And there were 21 of us who thought that was a good idea, and I was surprised at the bipartisan lack of interest in discussing it, maybe the same as you shared. But I do want to point out, just in the terms of the process and what we did vote for, what we didn't vote for, there were two resolutions on the table when we took up first of all, was one that had as a placeholder in it the governor's proposal about the health impact fee. But just to point out that had that passed the floor, which would have kept us away from here for quite a bit longer than we would be here now, that would have gone to you all then to amend and send back. It was a resolution only. It was, and Senator Lipson Olson put as placeholders that $380 million and then the other items that would have flowed down from that in his judgment. It was his resolution to start with. I co-authored it. But that would have had quite a vigorous debate, I think, into the evening, I would expect. And then it was a concurrent resolution. It would have gone to you all then to then give your best opinion and see if the Senate wanted to weigh in on such a resolution, which would have been most interesting to see how that one would have come out. And it may make sense at some point yet, but the House decided today it wasn't today, so that issue remains open for later times.
Senator Hunter, I appreciate that additional history. Why I found it particularly interesting is 3 or 4 years ago, Representative Olson and I, and Senator Neville, and I forget who the House Democrat was, put together a proposal for joint rules, which included a process by which we would publicly exchange overall target numbers back and forth. The proposal would go back and forth until we reached some agreement. So I on behalf of the group of us that put that together, and then we were roundly ignored, I thought it was good of Representative Olson to see if that was available at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's interesting to hear this history. I had not remembered that, Senator Hottinger, and I just wanted to say that, it's nice to know that there are three legs to this stool now, listening to your answer to Senator Hottinger. There are three legs, and I just want to point out that the Senate is one leg of that stool, and we are pretty firm about not tearing apart the infrastructure of our state, particularly in education and these healthcare issues that we're dealing with here. So I don't think it's a done deal yet about what numbers we're going to have to work on, because we are very, very serious about moving forward.
Senator Bergman.
In the meantime, I do believe that there are some things in this bill that would be good for us to talk about, and I realize some of them are money items, and so decisions can't be made, but you know, when the first day we went through the tracking sheet, we didn't even have identical tracking sheets, and we've never gone back there even. And I didn't think at that time it was appropriate, but I think, you know, there are some areas where, for instance, the House is beginning to implement a new nursing home reimbursement system, and we decided that we didn't think we were ready to do that because we didn't know how it was going to affect facilities very much, and both the facilities and the consumers were very nervous about it. So I think, you know, at some point having a discussion about where the House proposal is with that, because I don't think it's exactly where the governor was either, and so getting a discussion of that for our benefit would be useful. I think we each have some procedures that would be prior authorized in our bill, but they're not identical. I think maybe talking about the ones that aren't the same might be somewhat useful. I think there are some proposals in each side that are not in the other side that were not in the governor's bill, and so it might be useful to have a chance to discuss those a little bit. And
Senator Brooklyn, I wholeheartedly agree. I'm just trying to point to some reality. I do think, and we've had some discussions, I think that we could talk about some of our loan forgiveness, health professionals, where we have similarity but differences, even though it's money. In some cases, it's not money that would become, but even so, I think we might be able to resolve some of that, just so that all members have a chance to sort of hear this. We also, I think, could get value out of discussion about some of the evidence-based, prior authorization, performance reporting, medical necessity. We did one today, for example. So I think that collectively there's a whole bunch of them that we could sort of look at, compare, and educate ourselves. We also, I think, have a lot of similarities in the special transportation, but we have some differences. And we could probably visit, I think, probably both bodies have been through this kind of rough road on special transportation, and we both came to a conclusion, but it's a moving target, so maybe we can learn from that. We do have in both bodies some local exceptions, some policies like in ICFMRs, where I think it would be good for us to compare and talk about, so we kind of set ourselves a base. Thought I had one more. Well, there's another one. Well, I think we both would be very interested in lowering the co-pays for families with disabled children. We have very similar proposals, and I think a little bit of look at each other's, and we might find we're common ground there as well. So there are those, and I agree with you, Senator Brooklyn, where we can work as a base, even though these are committed to numbers. I was just sort of pointing out that even those would be a lot easier if we knew overall, and we will soon come to a point. And I guess just maybe point out the obvious, but the reality is there's a significant amount of, at the collection of total dollars, differences between the House and the Senate. And I, although I would love to say that we could be, because I will say this much, I think that this Conference Committee work group has done a good job of trying to do good government decisions. We have come to conclusions in areas which are non-money, which we had differences, and we worked through many of them, and we came to pretty good conclusions. I think that's been a mark of the work so far. I'm not so naive as to think that we would be able to do the same thing ourselves in money. It's pretty different, pretty significantly different. I wouldn't mind all visiting something, but I'm not so naive as to think that we can just simply say, well, I'll meet you here kind of thing. It's more, and Senator Lori, you kind of set the stage by sort of articulating. If that were a hard and firm stand, we'd have a long way to go. So somebody, somewhere is going to have to help nudge us along. I'm sorry, I kind of went a little bit of a field there, but sometimes it helps to sort of set the groundwork. So Senator Bergman will be calling us to meeting then next Tuesday at 10:30.
Right. My understanding, Mr. Chairman, is that both bodies will be meeting on Tuesday in the afternoon. I don't know exactly what time the Senate is scheduled for, but I think you're scheduled to come in around 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah,
so
around 3.
That would give us time, you know, in the morning and maybe early afternoon.
And from a planning point of view for members and interested people, I believe sort of the instructions are meet every day, switch the gavel, do it in public. Have I missed any points there?
Right. We don't have to meet every day, but if we don't meet, the gavel keeps rotating.
And yes,
the meetings will be in public.
And I don't know that we can say. I suspect at this point everyone should assume that we would, in fact, have meetings next week on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now, it'll have to be at the call of the chair and do something productive, but that would certainly at this point look like our intent. Are there any questions? Oh, yes. For those in the audience that didn't get copies, we do have copies. I would suggest if you can sort of hold in place and have the staff come by and hand it to you so it's not too crazy. With that, we're done.